Welcome to Teachings in the Air. Welcome to Teachings in the Air podcast with Jerry Oldman, coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit. Because that's what health means. Hello, this is Teachings in the Air with Sahilthit, a.k.a. Jerry Oldman. Today's podcast is about identity, about what is Indigenous. You know, I wanted to do this podcast for a while now, because of, I see some of my relatives, they're uneasy or even suffer around this whole topic of identity. When I think about, you know, authority and rights to identity, because identity is about sameness, it was so easy and clear at the beginning, before contact with Europeans. Because all the Statlium had an identified territory they occupied and used, and there's the same language, the same music, the same ceremonies, everything the same. So you didn't have to hunger for sameness. You were born and raised in it. And the authority and rights to identity, my imagination in those times, was in the hands of the grandmothers, the elders, that would say who's who. I know they would adopt people that they respect and they seen that had a good heart and good mind. That was happening in my imagination in those days. That was Statlium identity. That was being Indigenous as a Statlium person. You know, in my journey, I grew up in an Indigenous community. They call it the Seton Lake Indian Band. You know, and there's all Statlium. So I didn't have to wonder about sameness when I was a child. Because I'd look around, all the houses were Statlium people. You know, and I grew up in an inclusive home and community. You know, there was no doubt of who Jerry was and who his parents were and his grandparents, that I was Statlium. Even though as a child I didn't hear us identified as Statlium, we were the Indians. But I grew up in that home where everyone was an active participant in our life. We pack water, we cut wood, we work in the garden, we pick berries, you know, we work together. We were inclusive. We were a group, a good functioning team of human beings. And it's the same out in the community when I was a child. I tell people the story. My brother and I would say to our mother, we're going swimming over at Anderson Lake, which was at the other end of the community. It was like a four-mile walk. And we'd pick berries and go over. That would be our lunch, and we'd swim. Oh, it was beautiful, this river that connected the two lakes where I'm from. Oh, there's a beautiful swing that we could swing over the river and drop into the river. And it's a clear river. Oh, we just loved it there. Then we decide, oh, we better go home. So we start walking home. We get halfway. This elder sees us, and it's starting to get dark now. And he says, ah, Shimacha. He's calling us. Come here. So we go off to his house. And he says, you must be hungry. And he was had his supper, and he shared it with us. Then he says, it's dark now. And he didn't have a vehicle. He says, you sleep here. You go home in the morning. We said, oh, okay, no questions, no fear, nothing. And he laid out blankets for us on the floor, and my brother and I sleep there. Feeds us breakfast in the morning, and we take off and go home. When I think about it, there was no worry or concern from my parents because we were in an inclusive community. And I think about that, it was beautiful. It's a beautiful memory for me. So that's where I grew up. And then my journey took me to school, the day school. And it's the first time I started to get this, hey, I'm different, and to feel excluded. The teacher, you know, I made mistakes, a lot of mistakes in that first time I was doing arithmetic, adding and take away or minus. I remember my page was covered with X's. And I've been slapped around the ears and the face and both sides of my head. And that's when I started to hear the word stupid Indian. Little did I realize that that term was a created identity, that I was going to be walking through life, that people were following a path that was set out for them, and what indigenous people were, that we're stupid, that we're inferior. Created identity. This created identity business, we can do it for ourselves too. Like I was a drinking man and I drank and I had the identity of being a drunk, alcoholic. I created that identity by drinking. The same was for us, that our first identity that we received as indigenous people was pagan, savage, heathen peoples. Simply because we didn't know Christ, we didn't even know he existed. So that identity put on us was to create fear of us as peoples. And also in my imagination that it would be okay to do whatever you want with those people because they're not humans, because they're not Christians. You know, and that was from grade 1 to grade 12. I was in fear of making mistakes. And education wasn't a good road for me. You know, that that identity of stupid. You know, I experienced fear and humiliation by being beaten in front of my fellow students. And I wasn't the only one. It happened to a lot of us. Why this created identity? Of course, it was to get to the resources in this land called Canada, which has, of all the countries in the world, Canada is the second largest in regards to land mass. And such a diversity of resources in this country, it's wealthy compared to a lot of countries. So that experience of being something that wasn't positive. I hungered for sameness. I wanted to belong. And it felt like I didn't belong many times in my life. I didn't know my language. I didn't know songs, indigenous songs, you know, or hand drum songs. I hadn't been to ceremony. You know, I went hunting with my dad and fishing. I'd done that. That felt good. Learning those ways and picking berries. But the part that I was looking at in those days as glamorous was the singing and the dancing and the ceremony. I hadn't had that. So I didn't feel indigenous enough. You know, the harm that come from created identities was, of course, low self-esteem, my value of myself. That's why I feel it was so easy for me to abuse my body with alcohol and drugs. My life became hateful to me. Not to others, but to Jerry, to Sahilthit. Didn't feel right. I heard this term, white is right, black step back, brown step down. And I became rebellious when I heard that. You know, and that the rebellion, though, I'd hear my friends and I would say, you want to see a drunk? I'll show you a drunk and we'll drink. It saddens me today to say that. That's the only way we felt we could rebel. We're young minds, of course. And our oppression was there and we knew it. And we knew that that there are consequences to rebellion. Or saying no. Like my mom's dad said no. When they were going to take my mother to residential school. And he went to jail for 6 months. Of course, I wasn't even a thought then, but I was told this story by my mother, my late mother. And I wonder today how it impacted my grandfather's identity. And he rebelled. He said no. And there was consequences for him because of that. And I look back now, I say he was indigenous. He would stand up to what he felt was wrong. So this is, you know, the created identity. When I think of it now, the very first for us as indigenous people was that word Indian. I got to hate that word because of all the negative things that were attached to it. You stupid Indian, you crazy Indian, you lazy Indian, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I had this wonderful teacher from Nova Scotia, Mi'kmaq elder. Very brilliant, very kind, compassionate teacher. I was so lucky to have him as my elder. And he says to me, you know why they call us Red Man Jerry? And I says, no, elder, I don't. Because I'd think about it before that and I'd be confused and I look at myself. I said, I'm not red. And he says, well, there was a simple reason that I guess he figured out, or he was told maybe by his elders, that when they came and they seen the Mi'kmaq in the summer, they seen them in the summertime and they were covered in red ochre. You know, that finely ground earth, red rock, made into a powder, mixed with oil. And they spread it all over their body as a mosquito repellent. And I says, oh, that makes sense to me. They look red. So that identity of red man. I don't know. It makes sense to me, and I agree with my elder. That's why they call us red man. And he was teaching us, and he says, Jerry, because we're training people in workshops and things. And he says, we're talking about the Indian Act, and I see you when you hear the word Indian, you tense up. So I told him, yeah, I said, I don't like that word. So he says to me, Jerry, do you know how they call us Indians? I said, of course. He said, Christopher Columbus was looking for India. And he says, Jerry, in 1492, there wasn't a country called India. And I looked at him, I says, oh. He says, actually, this is what I think it comes from. He says, when Christopher Columbus landed in the Caribbean, and the people there greeted him when he touched land, got off his ship. And he's looking at these people walking towards him, and they were healthy. Stand tall and straight, clear-eyed, clean, beautiful, dignified-looking people. And Christopher Columbus said, Indios. He says, they're like gods. When my teacher told me that, I said, you can call me Indian every day if you want. Because I believe that too, from my teacher. That teacher taught me so much about energy, about healing. So that identity, created identity, has done a lot of harm. Our youth today, insecure at times about being indigenous, don't know a word in their language, don't know a song, never been to a ceremony, never hunted and fished. That's why I wanted to talk about identity today. Because, once I stepped onto the healing road, the doorway was to go to a ceremony with an elder. And he welcomed us young people to the ceremony, and it's the first time I'd ever seen a sweat lodge like that. I'd been to sweat with my uncle, just the two of us. And then when I went to this ceremony by this elder, there was music. My uncle didn't do music. But this man was singing beautiful songs, praying in the language. Voice filled with emotion. When we first come in, he says, thank you for being here. You're welcome here. This was built for you. Don't worry if you don't understand or you don't know. I know that many of our people don't know. He was such a wise elder. And he says, I'm going to be singing and praying in my language. But don't worry, I have a translator here. He'll translate what I'm saying for you so you can be part of the ceremony. And he was so inclusive. It just oozed out of him, you know, and we felt safe. And we felt, I remember I was sitting there and at times I had tears in my eyes. I felt it. And when you feel, you heal. Oh, he starts singing, praying. Then the translator, one point said, he's praying for his grandchildren. And that elder was weeping. He says he wants them to have teachers when he's gone to keep them on the right road. And I felt that ceremony. I felt that sincerity from that elder. And I said, I want what that man has. And it was the start of my going home to be indigenous. Then I was at a political gathering and I heard this indigenous leader say, I'm in the beginning stages of decolonizing myself. And I latched on to that word, decolonize myself. And I started and I figured out for me what decolonizing means. It means I'm not going to act like a colonizer or talk like a colonizer. Because, you know, my growing up, my elders didn't use foul language or swear words. And they speak their language and translate. And one of them actually told me, you know, we don't do that. We don't call people down. We don't belittle people. We don't say harsh words to them. That's being indigenous. So I said, I decolonized myself. I'm not going to do that. Of course, I don't drink alcohol because that's a colonizers brought the rum in. In my life, too, I said, I'm not going to fund their movement against us because liquor stores are owned by the government's control boards. And they get a lot of taxes and, you know, a lot of people drink. And I said, I'm not going to contribute to that anymore. I remember I heard this man from the United States say, stand up and be counted. And we were at a sobriety event. Stand up and be counted. And we all stood up. And I felt the same there. I remember that feeling of empowerment. You know, I heard and saw role models, young people my age, and some of them even younger. And I was in my mid-20s now. They're walking around, growing their hair out, using medicine, smudge bowl, feathers, hand drums, building sweat lodges, using words in the language. And they were my role models about feeling good about who I was. Wonderful role models. You know, and I just hear them chanting. I remember the first time I heard them. Standing around the fire, of course. And they were doing music. And I could hear it in their voice, and I could see it in their eyes and their posture, that they were totally all right in their own skin, being indigenous. Oh, I was watching them, and I said, I want that. And I was watching from a distance. You know, I wouldn't go right up to them, because I was insecure about being indigenous. There's one man seen me watching and he calls me over. He says, yeah, join us. And I said, I don't know how to sing. He says, well, you'll learn. You stand with us. Inclusiveness. He welcomed me into the circle. And I stood there. He says, you fake it till you make it. So I'm there with him. And they were doing this chant. Hey-yo, 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 hey-yo. And they put these words in there, and it said, D-I-E, I'm not your Indian. D-I-E, I'm not your Indian. D-I-E, I'm not your Indian. Hey-yo, hey, hey-yo, hey. And I started singing that song, and I was taking away that identity of Indian. I'm Statliam. D-I-A is the Department of Indian Affairs. I remember they put that identity of me of being an Indian when I got my first status card. It's called the Indian Status Card. And it was, I applied for my status card with a number on it and the name of my band, and it was given to me by the Department of Immigration in Canada. How weird is that, that an Indigenous person getting an immigrant card? Shows you the arrogance of those governments and that protecting what they have when they used those tools of colonization, like the doctrine of discovery, complete political and economic control of the Indigenous people. Take away our hereditary leaders. Take away our ceremony. Tell us how to live, how to be an Indian. Of course, now I'm in the healing road, and I'm not your Indian anymore. Now I'm Indigenous. Start to grow my hair. Start to use medicines. Making tea, fasting, cleansing. Doing all of those Indigenous things. And now also I knew how to approach elders, which was so simple. Just go sit with them. Don't ask for anything. And eventually they're going to start to teach you. And I started to do that. One elder said, this is a teaching for you. He'd say, be careful and sincere with your words when you're speaking to people. That's a wonderful teaching. When I talk to people, I'm careful. I'm sincere. I mean it. When I talk about healing or I talk about identity, I'm careful and I'm sincere. I don't want to hurt people's feelings. If I do, I'm sorry. It's so wonderful to me to be Indigenous. Because to me, Indigenous is about inclusivity. Not othering people or putting people down just because they're different or because of who they are. I've seen my community take in white people because they had a good heart and a good mind, or because one of our relatives started living with them, they take them in. Become just like us. Some of them weren't good people, but